Hello and welcome to the award-winning Canine Hooper's World podcast. Everyone's invited. Hello everybody and welcome to a slightly different episode of Canine Hooper's World podcast. This episode is actually the audio taken from an interview I did on the Pet Professional Guild Facebook group. So I just want to say a big thank you to Nikki and Judy for inviting me over to the PPG page. We had fun recording this and I thought that you guys would enjoy the audio. So I'm talking a bit more about what Hoopers is, how people can get involved and that kind of thing. So it's slightly different from our normal episodes and regular scheduling will resume next week. But until then, guys, I hope you enjoy and you get to learn a little bit more about the crazy sport that is Hoopers.
Good afternoon, everybody. I feel as if I'm not really sure where we are, Judy, because we normally do our chat and chuckles on a Monday or a Friday, and today is
Thursday.
So I have to tell you, all morning I've been like, because I don't work on Fridays, because I work Saturday and Sundays, and Friday's my very long run day where I can be out for 3, 4, 5 hours. This morning I thought, it must be Friday. We've got a chat and chuckle. And then I thought, no, it's Thursday. It's not even 3 o'clock. We're not even doing it at the normal time. So I'm even more confused.
It's confusing.
Okay, it's 1 o'clock. It's Thursday. It's the 23rd of February. And Judy and I are here joined by Carrie from
Canine Hooper's World.
Hoppers.
Yeah. Canine Hoopers.
It's not Hoppers, it's Hoopers.
Not Hoppers. Hoopers.
We just had this discussion. I gotta read.
Two O's means hop.
No, two O's is Hoopers.
No, we're not. Yeah, we're done.
yeah, we're done. Anyway, it's not Hoppers, it's Hoopers. So, Carrie, welcome to our Facebook Live. So,
hello.
Let's talk about you first. Who are you? Where are you? Because you're clearly in the UK. You sound like you're a Londoner.
Is it that obvious?
You sound like somewhere in the East End.
Oh, I'm close. I'm like South London, Norwich? Surrey border. Yeah.
Okay,
Hertfordshire, if I'm speaking correctly.
Okay, so where are you now? Where do you live? What's the area called?
We are in Worcester Park in Surrey, which is kind of right on the, like, we're near sort of Epsom area. Yeah, so no, I'm based in the UK.
Surrey for years. I lived in Richmond for many years.
Oh, well, there you go. So Worcester Park, so you'll know it.
Absolutely. Yeah, lovely. Okay, just so I can position you on the map. Okay.
Yes, so that's where we are.
All right.
Yeah, I basically, I live, eat, sleep, breathe, compete, train Hoopers.
Okay. So what is Hoopers? I know what Hoopers is because I have done a bit of research, but tell everybody what Hoopers is.
So for people that aren't familiar, it actually started over in America.
Right.
The lovely, lovely Sharon Nelson invented this obstacle called the hoop and added it into their agility and caused a great big hoo-ha because she added this teeny tiny little obstacle in. And then when it kind of hit European shores, and I'm going to say European is quite a broad spectrum because European Hoopers has become a completely different entity to where it started in agility. The basis of it is that you don't have to, but I mean, I distance handle because I have a German Shepherd and I can't keep up with him. So I joke that it's the laziest dog sport for the handler because the idea is that the handler doesn't move very much. And the dog does the majority of the work. You're just there to kind of orchestrate and conduct while the dog looks wonderful running around doing their thing. So courses are made up of hoops, and then you have barrels, tunnels, but the tunnels are shorter and bigger than agility tunnels, so they're a bit more kind of size friendly. The only breed I've had that said, no, I can't fit was a wolfhound, bless her. And she literally walked up to it and went, I don't fit.
Nope. Not doing it.
When I used to teach agility, I had a couple of Great Danes that couldn't get through my tunnels. They were massive.
Yeah, so the Hoopers tunnels are 80 centimetres, so they're like 20 centimetres more than the agility size tunnels. So They're a lot more kind of open for the dogs. They're also shorter and the dogs just go straight through them. There's no curves in them. As a sport, it's lower impact. I'm going to say that actually in ways it's harder, especially if you're distance handling, because you need the dog to know that they're on a line and trusting you and running away from you and not running next to them.
Yeah.
But from the point of view of kind of suitability, I think it's one of the most inclusive dog sports, because literally everything from teeny tiny chihuahuas all the way up to like Bobles, Danes, as long as they can get under the hoop safely, they can come and play hoopers. So it's a really kind of inclusive sport, which is one of the reasons why I love it so much.
Any age should be able to do it, right? Because it's no impact.
So I started training puppies, like my own puppy. I got him at 17 weeks as a rehome, and he kind of started at about 18 weeks, just messing around with going around one barrel, going through one hoop. In terms of competition, we still don't start competing till 18 months. Some organizations, I think it is 15 months, but for classes, some of our instructors do puppy classes. So they literally do puppy hoopers. And it's kind of those really nice foundations for other sports, and like dogs that are planning on doing agility, hoopers is a really nice foundation for that. But then you have the other end of the spectrum of dogs that are maybe needing to retire from other sports because of injury or just age, you know, because a 10-year-old dog, agility has quite a big impact, trials, stuff like that. Hoopers is a nice kind of retirement sport as well. But for my own dog, he's got bilateral hip dysplasia. So this is the perfect sport for him because we just do the running.
It's nice. Keeps him active.
Yes, exactly.
And thinking.
Yes, it's very mentally kind of, you need to, the thing I love with it, you and your dog are a team and you need to work together. Like, and that's the biggest thing for me, is just watching the teamwork build and the confidence in the team. It's also one of those sports that, thanks to our rule books, none of the kind of maybe harsher handling comes in, because you need your dog to work from a distance. And if you've been mean to your dog and your dog doesn't want to play with you, then they're just not going to do it.
They're not going to listen. Yeah,
exactly.
I saw a video actually that somebody put on Facebook a few weeks ago of hoopers, and they had them set in a sort of fenced in area, and the dog literally ran through the entrance gate and then just did the whole course.
Wow.
Should I tell you why I really like it? Because for many years I taught agility. I'm talking many years ago, like 2005, when I was living in Hawaii. And then when I first moved to Florida, I did it. And it's very difficult for a lot of people to compete at a really good standard, because they can't either afford the equipment to train and practice, or they don't have the space to put the equipment up.
Yes.
So, and I started a Just for Fun agility class, not knowing that at the time there was actually an organization called Just for Fun Agility. Because I recognized that a lot of my pet guardians wanted to do something with their dogs and wanted to do agility, but had no interest in competing. They just wanted to have some fun with it. And I got criticized by some serious agility coaches for doing that, because they felt that it shouldn't be watered down. And honestly, I don't care, as long as it encourages pet owners to have fun with their dogs and it's safe fun. Knock yourself out with it. But hoopers is different, isn't it? Because pet owners can often afford the equipment and or put it up in their backyards.
Oh, you can make the equipment, especially the hoops, you can make yourself. A lot of people, for barrels, you know, the garden bins that you get, like the pop-up, like garden bins, they are perfect.
Yeah.
The main costs are things like the tunnels, and in the UK we have a dash mat. Some organizations... Right. It's called a gate, but it's like a screen that the dogs run past. I don't know why it's called a gate, because they go past it, not through it. But that's just what it's called, which is weird. Okay. But for me, like, especially with you saying space, I can build hoop value with a single hoop in my living room.
That makes sense.
You don't need a lot of space for it. And actually, spending that time doing loads of shaping with the dog. Mm-hmm. And that's the main way I teach hoopers, is shaping and just building confidence in the dog. One winter, I was literally like in my garage with like three hoops and a barrel. Like, they weren't spaced particularly far apart, because I was training my chihuahua at the time. But you don't need bundles of room. Like, you can... I've been known to take a couple of barrels to the park and just set them up and do some barrel work in the park. Like, it's really easy and accessible.
Yeah. So how I mean, how do people compete? Is it scored? Is there a standard course time, like in agility? Are there points deducted or added for mistakes or speed? How does that work?
This is a bit of a kind of, there are lots of different organizations. There's lots of different ways of doing it. I mean, in the UK, off the top of my head, there's kind of four main organizations, and then there's independents as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Because in true Dog World fashion, no one can agree on anything.
Somebody has a better idea, so they go off and start a whole different organization.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, it's a whole thing at the moment. So there are kind of different ways of scoring. Some of them have like the agility score, where a clear round will always beat a faulted round. Right. Which is my preference. Some of them, it will be, you start off with a time, and then you start off with 100 points, then you have your time and faults deducted, and then the highest score will win. Yeah. Some of them you have to handle. So like the German rule book, for example, you have to be in a handler area. You have to distance handle. In the UK.
I had no idea this was all over the world. Did you know that, Judy?
So I have over 500 instructors in, I think, 23 countries now.
Wow.
That's amazing. Awesome. Yeah.
It's spread its wings. Like, it's a thing. It's very popular. Like, the Netherlands, Germany, Switzerland, Sweden, Finland. I've got a lot of trainers over in Australia, in the UK, and then like Spain, Portugal, Italy, France. Some in the US, some in Canada. Like,
where is it most well known? Is it in the UK or in the US?
So considering it started in the US, I think it's being known more about now, but agility is still kind of the more known sport. Yeah. In the UK, it's just coming in. I mean, the East Anglia Staffordshire Bull Terrier display team, shout out to those guys. They actually demo it at Crufts and have been for the last few years, which is an amazing showcase for it.
Yeah.
And at Discover Dogs, which again is another big show over here. So people are kind of becoming a bit more aware of what it is. Yeah. I'm going to put my neck right out on the line here and say my wish for 10 years' time would be that pet dogs are doing hoopers rather than agility, because hoopers taught well is suitable for all. Agility taught badly is dangerous.
Yeah.
I know I'm putting my neck on the chopping block saying that, but I'm like, I wish more kind of pet dog stuff were going to hoopers rather than agility. Yeah. Because if people then want to compete in agility, they've given their dogs good foundations with hoopers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems too that it's more laid back, not as intensely competitive, because here in the US, here in the US, I have seen people, they will jeopardize their dog for an agility ribbon.
Yeah.
And it seems in Hoopers.
Yeah, but you know what, Jude? I mean, I honestly think
that's anything.
So I think I hear what you're saying, but I think that might be our naivety in terms of not being massively connected to it. Because my experience, and I mean, it's one of the reasons why I stopped competing at agility, because I recognized that I took a dog who was a lovely dog that loved agility to a dog that barely could handle it, because I was so frustrating to as a handler.
Yeah, yeah. That
was my personality. I just wanted to bloody win everything.
Right.
My husband said to me one day, he got hold of my first dog, Dobie, and said, well, I'm taking her home. She's miserable. What the hell have you done to our dog? And I thought, and I wasn't punishing her or anything.
No,
it was just your stress. It was the constant drilling and the constant ride.
Yeah.
And we spent weeks going on to an agility course and playing tennis balls with her to get a love of the equipment back again. So I would imagine that there are people in Hoopers that are just as competitive.
I think for me, like, I'm a super competitive person. I'm like, I've got older brothers. We're all very sporty growing up. Like, the ongoing joke in our house is second place is best loser. Like, that's just how it is in our house. So I am naturally competitive, but it is always, always for me, dog first, sport second. Right. And I would say 99% of the people I meet in Hoopers are the same. Yes, there might be people that maybe keep running their dogs a little bit longer, or are maybe kind of, you know, I retired my Chihuahua from competition because she just hates it.
Yeah.
She just doesn't like competing.
Well, this dog here, I rescued at 12 months of age, having been to 5 homes because she was supposedly a pistol and was going to be an excellent agility dog. And she hated it. She spent the next 12 years sitting on a sofa, herding the TV. I mean, that's all she wanted to do. So, but to be fair, and Carrie, you said that, you know, dogs come first, but I know a lot of people that say that, but that's not what their actions are, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think sometimes we have and I'm sure I fall into this category too. We have a disconnect between what we think we're doing and what we're actually doing.
I mean, I think I'm very lucky that my friends within the Hoopers community, if they think that my dog doesn't look sound, with Dodge, it's mainly like, does he look sound? Does he look okay? Last year, I struggled towards the end of the summer season just because of the ground conditions. They were so hard and almost slippy that one of the shows I went to the last day, I took him in the ring and did start line weights.
Yeah.
Because the ground just wasn't right for us. Yeah. And to me, it was far more important to spend that time in the ring doing those start line weights. And actually, there were bitches in season at the show as well. So that was a good working environment for an entire male dog. That's the other thing. A lot of sports don't have bitches in season running. A lot of the hoop organizations allow it, as long as we know and we run the bitches last.
Okay.
And I don't have a problem with that. And I have an entire male.
Because
I don't feel that anyone should be missing out, like, just because their girls come into season.
Yeah.
If the girl is happy to run, if that bitch is happy to run when she's in season, then I don't see why not. And to me, it's a training thing with my boy, because he could come across a bitch in season in the world anywhere. So it's a training thing for me.
So are you able to, I mean, is there a season or is it just all year round? And are you able to compete every weekend? Are there lots of events going on? And are the events at different levels? So they have like novice events and advanced and...
So it tends to be over the summer, we have like the bigger shows, that longer shows, which will be like a whole weekend. So you can be competing 2, 3, 4, 5. There's sometimes like some big events that are either like a 7-day show or a 10-day show, which are like intense. I did the first part of one of those last year with Dodge, and it was too much for him. And this year we might go and do one weekend, but I certainly wouldn't do back-to-back weekends, especially camping with him as well. Like, it's a lot. But I found with him actually in the winter, because most of the competitions are either indoors, or if they're outdoors, they're on like a sand equestrian surface. He runs better on sand. So for me, my winter season actually is kind of better than the summer season is.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I try I try and consciously plan it so he has at least a month off one end or the other. I try and kind of do summer month off, then winter month off. I don't know whether it's going to pan out like that quite this year, but I do make sure that he has downtime as well as competing. Right. In terms of competition, I wouldn't compete in more than 3 comps a month. That would be my maximum, just because the dog he needs a lot of decompression time because he's a dramatic shepherd.
Okay. So if I, let's say that I want to get involved in this sport, let's say that I want to learn how to teach it and I want to be able to get involved in it. How do I do that?
So over at Canine Hoopers World, if I'm allowed to plug some of my stuff, if that's okay.
Of course you are.
We have online stuff. So I've got, there's 2 courses that I co-wrote with actually my trainer, Lisa Jordan, called Core Handling and Core 2. And that's the distance handling. That is literally the program that Dodge went through from puppy all the way through to now being one of the best dogs in the country, because he's epic. He won the Shepherd League last year, so I can say that. I have the rosette to prove it, that we did good ribbons. If you are in the UK or actually in any country, kind of go on our website, see if there is a trainer around. We've got a Facebook page, so you can go on the page, join the Facebook group and just say, hi, I'm in this area. We have Hoopers at Home, which is like a more beginner kind of, if people just want to have a bit of fun with Hoopers with their dogs, that will teach you the foundations.
Right.
And then for instructors, we have online courses. So this is how I've reached so many trainers, because anywhere in the world, you can sign up. And the level one course teaches you all the foundations and the safety stuff. And then the level two teaches you more about lines and develops your skills and knowledge as a trainer. So we've kind of got this whole big package of online stuff that it kind of happened just before COVID, but actually for me, COVID kind of pushed people more to online learning. Yeah. So for my business, it was actually quite a good thing, but I'm now getting back into my in-person stuff. And little sneak preview to you guys, for you guys, I am going to be back in Australia this year, which I'm super excited about. I'm doing in-person in Perth WA in October, and there will be more of that to come.
Who actually owns the concept of this? I mean, who was it who sort of developed it, trademarked it, or did
Sharon Nelson invented the hoop.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of developed. So the sport itself, I think, is now like 11, 12 years old.
Right.
And originally it was just a hoop and an agility course. And you can imagine the agility people were very angered by this, because now this little obstacle was on the course. As I say, now it's come over to the UK and over to Europe. It's just become its own entity. And like, we run Hooper shows alongside agility shows, and people do both sports, but also it's now its own sport, like, which is really cool. And I can, like, I think the way it's going, already there's murmurs of FCI rule books being made and stuff like that. Kennel clubs across the world wanting to be involved, wanting to get involved. That's a whole debate that we're not having here. But for me,
is it like agility? Can anybody just teach it, even if they don't really know what it is? Or is the name trademarked and you have to be...
No, anyone can teach it. Anyone can be involved. And this is one of the reasons why I would love people that want to train a sport for fun to do hoopers rather than agility.
Right.
Because it's just safer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, if you teach a jumper or contact badly, it's dangerous for the dog. It can be detrimental.
Yeah.
Well, not just that,
or if they fall off a piece of equipment.
Well, yeah. I mean, in my experience, people were training agility that just because they were good agility handlers, but they didn't necessarily understand how to teach it. I mean, I watched a golden retriever fall off a dog walk, land on its back, and end up bruising its lungs. I mean, it was rushed off to a vet. So, and that was the first time I went on a dog walk. There was no incremental change in the height or balance or back leg coordination. It was just like, oh, just run your dog over the dog walk.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Dogs can be seriously injured. Yeah, so can
I. I mean, the main kind of safety thing in hoopers at the moment, and there's a bit more of a movement happening to go to baseless hoops. So at the moment, the original design had a bar that went across the floor, and it's not very deep, but there have been toe injuries. There have been dogs that have trodden on the base bar and slipped slightly. So in Germany, quite a lot of them use baseless hoops. I know they're available in like Sweden and stuff. It seems to be like that part of the world is using baseless equipment a lot more. And now in the UK, some of the competition organizations are starting to go over to baseless hoops as well. It's my preference. I wish that everyone was doing baseless hoops, but again, like with any sport, you know, because it's still new, kind of everyone's just got this equipment, and now all of a sudden there's a change that's being kind of considered. But to me, it makes the sport more inclusive and more safe. So let's do baseless, please.
I'm
actually looking at it while we're talking, because I have seen these hoops before. I mean, because obviously you can buy them at a lot of the, like, Just for Fun Agility and Agility for Less. Some of the big agility sites sell them. So cool.
I can send you some videos over, Nikki, of like me and the boy in action, so people can see what it looks like in the wild, as it were.
I think I saw someone do it with a bunny rabbit, actually. I think I saw a video where someone took a bunny rabbit through it.
So one of the instructor courses I taught, there was two cats on site that were like the yard cats. And I did have one of the yard cats going through the hoops, and the poor trainer, Mr. Greg, who I do another podcast with, he actually, the cat, every time he set up the hoops, the cat kept coming into the training area, and he was like, dude, this is not helpful. Like, you've now encouraged the cats to come into the training area. And I'm like, well, it's good proofing, isn't it? And I'm like, oh, God. All right.
Yeah. Why can't I seem to remember seeing the video of a cat doing it as well, actually. With a young girl.
One of the instructors has had her chickens doing it. Like, her chickens are quite
Why
involved.
Not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I did do an April Fool's with a hyena doing it. And I think I did a penguin one year as well. I was just picking, like, random animals to do hoopers. Like, yeah. I wish, like, I would love to see it in zoos as in Richmond. Like, let's put some hoopers equipment out for the animals and get them doing some hoopers. Yeah. Like, I think this would be great in Richmond.
Is a course a standard size, or does it depend on the size of the dog and the level? How does that work? And does it have... I mean, and are there a minimum and a maximum pieces of equipment that have to be on a course?
So generally it's minimum 15 obstacles, maximum 25, roughly. Right. Some are like 16, 26, but it's roughly 15, 25. Spacing, again, it depends on the organisation. Mm-hmm. Most of them run 5 to 10 metre spacing now in the UK. That's kind of a fairly standard spacing. You tend to get the bigger spacing at the higher grades. Okay. So we start them off on, say, 5 meter spacing at grade one, and then grade two, you might go up to maybe 7, and then grade 3, 4, you'd be going up to like 10 meter spacing. I've got a dog that eats up the ground with his strides, so that's cool with me. Okay. But also my chihuahua was just as happy doing the big spacing. Yeah. So all dogs run over the same course. So it's not like agility, you have to keep stopping, changing the jump height.
Right.
All dogs run the same course. Yeah.
Okay.
We measure the dogs with their owner rather than at the withers. So it's a leg measurement.
Okay.
So roughly, again, some organizations have different height categories and stuff, but it's generally 15 centimeters and below is small, over 15 centimeters is large.
Oh, so that's just for competing in a group. Yep. So it's fair. It's not the equipment, not the course or anything else, right?
But we have special classes that are like just for fun, where like it may be like you might do pairs, for example, or it might be that the course is made up of more tunnels, or one of them, like you take all the numbers up so the handlers have to remember where they're going. Like, that's always a fun one.
Yeah.
Those, all the dogs compete against each other. And I could tell you, some of these little Staffordshires and Cockers keep up with the collies and the big dogs.
So all the courses that I've seen, not really sort of at the time, not really understanding what I was seeing, just thinking somebody just made up some game in the backyard, maybe they had, the courses were all circular, so
they're very flowing.
Okay, so are they sort of normally S's or circles, or
it's very flowing? So in hoopers, if the dog misses an obstacle, they keep going. If you stop your dog and take them back, you're eliminated. This catches a lot of agility people out, because they're like, oh, what? So whereas in agility, you would send the dog like round the back of jumps, or like they'd have to go over the jump and then turn.
Yeah.
Tunnel entries are all sort of angles that give me palpitations. Hoopers tunnels, the dogs go in straight, come out straight.
So it's all line of sight. They can see
always
everything.
Safe. Yeah. Because if they've done agility tunnels where they've learned to bank, because our tunnels are deeper and bigger, if they go to bank on a hooper's tunnel, they're going to slip and hurt themselves. So that was a safety thing brought in straight away.
Yeah.
In regards of course design, it's very like kind of, you'll either have gentle curves, or if a turn is going to be tighter, it's going to be round a barrel. So it's quite a solid object for the dog to know that they are turning around an obstacle.
Right.
And in general course design, kind of in the UK, the lower grades, you'd only have sort of one change of direction, maybe two, and then you have more changes of direction as the dogs get more advanced. Obviously, in agility, you have so many lead leg changes, like continuously.
Yeah.
In hoopers, a typical grade one, like starter beginner course for me, I might not even put a single lead leg change in as a judge, because you're trying to keep the flow going. So this is where the distance handling really comes in, because if the dog understands the line and understands the equipment, you can literally stand still and the dog's just taken the line and off they go, which is wicked.
So I'm going to have to talk to Robert Hewings about that, because Robert Hewings always laughs about the fact that scent work is for lazy dog handlers.
Oh, me and Robert always have this discussion. Don't worry.
He can just like sit down. And when he came to my place, all my agility equipment was out, and he goes, "Oh, you agility people, you spend too much time running around, too much energy. I can sit down, have a cup of coffee, watch my dog work."
So can I.
Yeah.
I've actually got there is a video of an instructor sat in a chair with a glass of wine while her dog runs the course. So thank you very much.
Yeah. That's fun. Have you ever done this, Judy?
I've done agility, but I would love to do this. Yeah. And I like the flow aspect of it, because I see so many dogs, you know, hitting that ground and turning, you know, when they're doing agility or even frisbee, you know, you kind of start worrying about the physical aspect of what these dogs are doing.
Yeah. On the contacts. I mean, it's just so sudden on their joints.
Well, I saw a video and they actually stopped screen at different particular angles, and you'd see these joints of these dogs just totally discombobulated. If you see that video, you'll never do agility, you know. Mm-hmm. But this sport would be so much more fun to me. It would be more fun because I'm not worried in the background is he going to fall off a piece of equipment or something.
How much do you think it would cost to put together enough equipment to be able to run a 15 to 20 obstacle course?
What sort of investment's needed if you're building it yourself? I mean, like, if you were an instructor that wanted, you know, good, decent kit and you wanted to have the best equipment, with the kind of the basis hoops coming in, some of the instructors are converting their old style hoops over to the new style hoops. One of my instructors, Tracy, did a really cool video that's in the Canine Hoop as well Facebook group of how to convert your hoops.
Right.
So if you're potentially going to be competing over both styles, you can just convert your hoops over to practice on both styles of them. But realistically, without buying a tunnel, so if you were just getting the hoops and the barrels, I would say under £200.
Right.
You could have enough to set up a full competition course.
Okay.
Like, you'd literally, for you guys over there, you'd go to Home Depot, you go to the plumbing department, you buy the pipe you need, and you buy the underfloor heating pipe you need to make the top bit.
Yeah.
That's the secret of the basis hoops. The underfloor heat pipe holds its shape.
Yeah.
Then you pick up some garden barrels, and that's the equipment you need.
Right. Interesting.
Nice.
Yeah, interesting.
So it's one of the other reasons I like it, because
How did you first get into it? Did you do agility or did you not?
Nope.
You didn't?
Nope. I've never done agility. I did it at kind of a fun level. So we lost our Bulbury girl just before the new year happened, and she loved agility to the point where she would do like 3-foot obstacles, and then I would have a bull breed hanging off my arm, which if anyone works with bull breeds, you know that's not the most fun thing for them to do, and it's a little bit owie. So for her, we started doing hoops, but as soon as she realized tunnels were involved, it just became way too arousing. So she was like, "We're still running and going through things, oh my god." I actually did a class with my chihuahua and was like, "Let's try it." And oh my god, you know when you just find the thing that your dog just goes, "Let's do this." She'd done trick stuff. I mean, both my chihuahuas they've done bite work, they've done rally, they've tried flyball, they've tried agility, they've done obedience. Like, you name the sport, we've kind of tried it. And then hoop has just hit the spot for both of us. Yeah. Like, I was literally just hooked. I was like, this is what we need to do. And then obviously when I got Dodge, I was like, right, he's going to be a Hooper's dog. Distance handling with a herding breed, it taps into those genetics. Let's use the genetics to advantage. See a lot of gun dogs doing Hoopers as well, because again, they are bred to work away from their handlers. But for me, when I found out Dodge's hips were basically non-existent, I was like, am I going to lose my competition dog? Like, where is this going? And the specialist is like, there is no reason this dog cannot do it. And actually, this is keeping him fit and active. And he said he'd much prefer he's doing Hooper's runs and competing in a safe environment where the ground is flat than me taking for walks and potentially going down a rabbit hole or slipping on something, chasing a squirrel. You know, so for him, Dodge, just because of the dog he is, doesn't get a lot of off-lead time unless we're somewhere private. Hooper's is a time where he's off-lead and we're working together.
How old is he now?
He's 3. He'll be 4 in July.
And he's a German Shepherd.
Yep, German Shepherd. Security lines.
Right.
Yay, that's fun. I'm going to say to the world, never, ever buy a security line German Shepherd. It's just stupid life choices. Don't do it.
I'm always amazed, and it not so much now because I don't do a lot of group class training anymore. I just work with private clients. But I was always amazed at how many people would turn up to a puppy class with a Malinois. And you just think,
yeah,
do you have any idea what they've got themselves into?
Right. Or a border collie. I mean, I live with 2 of them, and it's like,
to be honest, anything that is in that herding group,
yes,
I feel you need to check your life choices before making this choice.
Yes.
Right. You know, you look at the coolies, the kelpies. Like, I wouldn't have a coolie with a kelpie in my house.
I mean, the very first dog I ever had was a kelpie. My first ever dog. Yeah, go figure.
Please don't judge the Malinois people.
I mean, I traveled the world for my career, and when I finally landed in the US in Hawaii, I knew we were going to be staying there. It wasn't a 2-year contract. We'd done our foreign bit. And I said to my husband, I'm going to get a puppy. Never had a dog before. This is in 2000. And on the big island of Hawaii, Hawaii, you can't bring dogs in from the mainland because of rabies. But you can bring them in straight from Australia because Hawaii's rabies free and Australia's rabies free. Mm-hmm. So guess what most of the dogs in Hawaii are?
I'm going to say coolies, kelpies and cattle dogs then.
Right.
Yeah.
So here I go. I get myself a kelpie. And when it's like 8 weeks of age, I'm going, what the hell have I done? And hadn't even looked at the typical pet owner, right? Went and bought the dog, brought it, no crate, no kennel, no understanding of the breed. I just wanted a puppy and this is cute, let's go buy it. And it's how I first got into dog training, right? And it's how I got into agility because I had to find something that would work. It's how I first also accelerated from being a medium distance runner to being a long distance runner because we would take the dog out for like 10 or 15 miles and it would just quite happily jog by the side of us. Yeah,
hilarious.
But you're right. I mean, these are the dogs that are quite happy just to go off and do their thing.
Yeah.
Every now and again, they check back in to say, "Are we all right? We're doing all right." Yeah.
Well, last week I was competing, and obviously with my laryngitis, I was like, "Oh, so I've got to handle my dog with no voice." Okay, let's see what happens. Mm-hmm. And luckily, most of my turn into me cues are whistles.
Right.
So I could still do those.
Yeah.
Thankfully. And I had kind of just enough voice to be able to steer him, like to drive him on. But it was like, oh, this is going to be a whole thing. But again, because of his understanding of go on the line and keep going. And he's so used to my body language. You know, at training, I will deliberately do like quiet training where I don't say anything.
Yeah.
Which, thank goodness I've trained that. But I also do it where I try and stand completely still and just use verbals, which he actually finds harder. He's much more in tune to me moving. I'm quite an animated person.
Well, and the shoulders and the feet. Right. I mean, that's what they cue
into.
Massively.
Yeah.
Like the slightest turn of the shoulder and the dogs come off the line.
Yeah.
Like, But also the way I handle him is different from agility. So I off-arm handle. So I'm facing him most of the time rather than being shoulder onto him. Mm-hmm. So with like going back to our online courses, the core handling is about that off arm handling. So we call it core because the core of your body is linked to the dog rather than agility, where your
shoulders and your
shoulder and you're drawing a line for the dog. I always say when you're doing agility, you have either a magic wand or a lightsaber and you're telling the dog where to go. Whereas when we're core handling, you're guiding the nose the whole time. So you're basically steering the dog's front end with your hand.
Right. Right.
It's such a different form.
I'm sorry, Jay. Go on.
It's such a different form of communications. You know, one thing I do with my dogs when I'm herding with them is I talk very quietly. And, you know, I can give her a cue almost whispering. And it's so fun when you can do that. It just shows the dog's skill and your ability to teach them without having to intensify anything.
Yeah.
That's great.
Well, it's like with agility. I mean, you can guide dogs. Yeah. Right? When a dog gets to know what you
right.
know, body language, you can guide them just with slight movements mm-hmm. in your body, and they know exactly where they're going.
And yeah. actually, one of the things for me that's really interesting, when I'm competing, the more technical a course is, the quieter I am. Mm-hmm. Because yeah. I have to become one of those sat navs that is only giving him the required information. Because if there's too much noise going on, especially with his accelerator, like I don't need to accelerate him into a corner because
yeah.
he's called Dodge for a reason. He is named after the truck, basically. Yeah. I joke that he's more of a challenger, but he corners about the same as a Dodge does. Right. So I have to be really mindful how I'm handling him. So if a course is more technical and twisty, I have to be quiet because right. if I'm geeing him up too much and I open up the throttle, like the back end drifts and it's not pretty.
Yeah.
It is literally like driving yeah. a big truck.
Don't you just love with all these dog sports though when you get a dog that a breed of dog or an individual dog that just doesn't look like it's going to be good and they just end up being absolute superstars, like the Chihuahua or the pug or something that just suddenly
yeah.
finds its niche and just off it goes, right? You just yeah. think, wow, who'd have thought that dog
we had a Yorkie-ish kind of dog in Brisby, and his name was no bigger than a Chigger, and he could beat any Border Collie.
Did they use the tiny disc with him or the big disc?
Yeah,
the little tiny.
They used the micro disc. Yeah, I think he was the reason they invented micro disc. Actually,
well, I mean, really all fun. my Chihuahuas used to work on the micro disc. Yeah, as well. That's ones. How I know about them.
I mean, Chihuahuas yeah. are amazing little dogs. I spoke to Rob and Karen about a month ago, and they were telling me that they just finished a new instructor course with the Canine Scent College. And the dog that had excelled over all the others was like a little 6-pound Chihuahua.
Honestly, they are just mm-hmm. sass in yeah. this teeny tiny.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I joke that yeah. mine are teacup German Shepherds.
Well, there was a police department recently that introduced their new police dog. And it was a little Chihuahua that came prancing down the hall. But they said he was amazing for drug detection.
Yeah.
There was one as well in Japan that was used for rescuing after earthquakes, because obviously a Chihuahua is less likely to, with unstable
disturb the rubble, right? They can maneuver.
Yeah.
So yeah, there was a search and rescue mm-hmm. Chihuahua in Japan. I remember reading yeah. about that. But going That's back great. To different breeds, I have a lot of them, and I see them at competition as well. Miniature Dachshunds. Yeah. How many sports that are safe for miniature dachshunds right. physically, apart from sample?
Yeah. And those elongated low rider dogs.
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm.
anything that's raising them up or bringing them back down again at high speed.
Yeah. Not,
and this is right. why I like the baseless yeah. hoops as well, because it takes mm-hmm. all element of yeah. any type of jumping out,
yeah.
thinking of the tiny dogs. And
right.
it just honestly, so I train 3 wirehead Dachshunds. It's the same owner. They come along. The collective term for those 3 is the savages, because they're just hilarious. But they all absolutely love doing their hoopers. Like right. they just love it.
Yeah. They probably like doing something more than what we expect them to do, sitting on the couch, being carried around or whatnot.
I mean, when you think what Dachshunds were bred for originally, going down holes and chasing big ferocious beasties, like yeah. giving them a job is actually yeah. a really good yeah. idea.
Yeah.
When you say
that they're now going baseless, was the base before, did it sit on the ground or was yes. it slightly raised? Like,
it is flush on the ground. But
it was there for stability, but the dogs had to sort of go over it. Yeah.
This is the thing. So when it depends on what size pipes being used as well, because like most people make it from, what would it be, 1/2-inch like, pipe. So mm-hmm. I think it's like 21.5 mil, but then at competition it's inch pipe. Now obviously oh. it doesn't seem like a lot, but when you're running yeah. a Chihuahua, like
yeah.
that's a little jump.
Enough to catch a toe.
Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of yeah. that's been what we have unfortunately found, that some yeah. dogs have ended up with a toe injury, which
right
you know they could do that out in the woods running, you know yeah. they could do that yeah. on a hiking yeah. trail, but
you don't want it in competition, because
let's
then
make it as safe as yeah. we can. Yes, right. exactly yeah. that, exactly
keep
that.
It positive
yes.
for the dogs
yeah mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's go back to the courses. Let's bring this back around, because I'd hate to end this without giving people more information about how they can get involved. So if somebody goes to your website and they sign up for a course, how long is a course? How much is it for someone to work through? What's the time? What time is required to do it? Sort of comfortable pace, but you know, getting through it.
So with the instructor course, is the level one is based on our 1 day course, and the level two is based on our 2 day course. So with the level two, you do need access to equipment, because I get them to send videos in of them working their own dogs so I can give feedback. And so we can see how the team's working and their understanding of teaching the elements. The level one is a little bit more theory based. And then there's kind of questions at the end to answer. Also, for the instructors that do our level one course, they get 8 weeks of lesson plans once they've passed, so that you have an idea of what to teach and how to teach it. Because sometimes, you know, you go on these courses and you learn these really cool things, and then you go, and now I have to work out a lesson plan.
Tell me this, because on the website I'm seeing level two, but I'm not seeing something called level one. So what is the name of the course? Is it the
is that on my website right now?
Yes.
So if you go into where it will say courses,
it's
probably just I've messed up and my website guy's going to tell me off for writing the wrong number on the wrong thing. It should say instructor course, and then maybe online instructor course, and then there'll be level two online, level two in person.
All right, because I've got, there's a Hoopers instructor course online.
Yep.
Then there's a Canine Hoopers World instructor course.
Yep.
And then
so the online one is the online level one, and the instructor course is the in-person level one.
All right, so if I wanted to start this program with level one, I would choose the Hoopers instructors course online.
If you were going to do it where you are right now.
Right.
Now, we do have bundles. So if people are like, right, I'm going to deep dive into here.
Right.
I think off the top of my head, and I should know this, but I believe that all like the four courses, so instructor one and two and core one and two collectively, I believe are
£550.
There you go. £550 for four online courses, which is obviously a really big saving.
Yeah. Okay, got
it. Would be like all the knowledge in your brain that you would need.
Right. I didn't want anyone going here and going, well, I can't find the level one. So,
yeah, so
if you're listening to this and you want to go and explore it, you go to caninehoopersworld.com and go to courses. And the course you're looking for is the Hoopers Instructors course online, or the Canine Hoopers World Instructor course, which is in person.
Yes. Right. Now, if you are a handler, or you're just an instructor that thinks, well, I don't know if I want to teach it, but I would like to have a go, then there's either the Hoopers at Home, which is kind of the more fun one, or there is Core Handling, which is for people that are going to want to distance handle, geek out a little bit more. There's loads of exercises in there. That kind of, to be honest, the amount of videos in it, like you could work through that over weeks and weeks and weeks with your dogs. That's not going to be like a, you can do everything in one day of your dog, because their brains would break.
Okay, got it. All right.
How long do people have access to the courses once they purchase them? Do they have a certain amount of time they have to finish it in?
To infinity and beyond.
Awesome.
It's as long as we are a company and the website is available, then the courses are there, and that's how we're doing it. So hopefully till my days, and then maybe beyond my days, I don't know. By then we probably won't even have computers. It'll all just, I don't know, be our brains or something.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. So we're chatting with Carrie Selwyn from Hoopers World, and you can visit her website at caninehoopersworld.com. I'm assuming that you have a Facebook page as well. So how can they find you on Facebook?
Yeah, on the Facebook, we are just Canine Hoopers World. There's a little page, and then you can get into the group from the page. Please answer the questions, guys. If you don't agree to the group rules, then I have very good admin that will go, no, you are not allowed in. Because we like it to be a nice, fun, safe space. And in there, there's some little freebies in the files. You can see some videos. It's quite a nice little hub in there. Then if you want to see a bit more of kind of what I'm doing with Dodge, I'm on the TikTok. I'm down with the kids now, and I've got on the TikTok.
on the TikTok.
Well, I am on the, my Instagram.
It reminds me of but that expression of that gentleman. I'm on the Facebook.
Yeah, yeah. I'm on the TikTok. Like, seriously.
I'm on the Twitter.
I'm like, okay. So Instagram is actually, if you want to know more of what I'm doing, Dodge has got his own Instagram, which is at Dodge Shepherd. That's where I post the most stuff. Okay. And I really so forget about my
learn,
business.
Go straight to the source. Go to Dodge's Instagram.
Yeah, just go to Dodge.
There you go.
Bypass Gary. Go straight to Dodge.
One of the things I've been doing on all our social platforms this year, it's new for this year, I was kind of doing some start line weight proofing, and then one day I was doing it and kind of started dancing a bit. And now every Monday there is a new dance for the start line weight. So we've done, say we, this is me and Dodge, and literally yeah. you can hear the eye rolls in the right. shepherd's head as he stands there going, oh my God, is she doing this again? Are you serious, Mum? Like, what are you doing? But we've
done, fine. My dogs roll their eyes at me 100 times a day.
We've done the Macarena. We've done YMCA. March is planned as musical month. So I've picked 4 songs from musicals. Right. And it's fun. Literally me dancing while this poor dog is standing going, can I just do the fun stuff yet? Or are you just going to? But everyone keeps saying to me, you do know at competition now, if you don't do a dance, he's not going to start. And I'm like,
Yeah, you're building it into the thing.
Like, I'm going to have to like bust out a bit of Running Man before I can start my run.
is really a
Are you on the TikTok? Are you on the TikTok? I mean, jokes aside, all the bedlam that went down in the dog training industry in the last month, I was so not involved in that because I'm not on the TikTok, and apparently it was really bad on the TikTok. And I wasn't even tempted to join the TikTok to go and see what was happening on the TikTok.
To be honest, it's me and Dodge, like, just doing stupid, like, audios, doing our start line weights, him at Hydro, some other training stuff. To me, German Shepherds are one of those breeds that unfortunately fall into that you need to show them who's boss category a lot of the time. And I want to show that this little pink-haired dog trainer can do some awesome stuff with her dog. Yeah. Just using cookies and toys, like
absolutely.
I'm embracing the cookie pushing.
Well, you know, isn't it funny when we get those sort of, you know, derogatory sayings or cookie pushers? I'm a proud cookie pusher. I'm a good.
Like, I'm like, yep, I'm owning that. That's cool.
No problem with that label at all. No, bring it on. More cookies, so, better.
For me, that was kind of why I went on TikTok, because I was like, if I can put some content out there that people with this type of dog can see and go, oh, okay, there's loads of videos of him wearing his muzzle as well, because I'm like, look, he's muzzled in public. This is perfectly normal and perfectly acceptable. And it's fine, because we need to start changing the narrative. And social media has a very big impact on people. Mm-hmm. And the more we start dripping the good stuff in, it will start creating the ripples.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. On my TikTok, I only put my deer videos. And
you are on the TikTok.
Oh my God, Judy, make sure you follow me.
I'm feeling very much on the TikTok. I have no idea my colleague was on the TikTok.
Get on the TikTok. Well, it was a dare.
Do I need to get myself a TikTok account now?
Nikki, I feel you should come and join us. Like, and honestly, like, when I see any of the trainers that maybe our ethics don't align, and that is going to be the way I'm going to term it, I just press the block button now, because I don't need them in my space. I'm just like, and I don't need to see that. Okay, cool.
I have a very long block list.
No, I think I've been on Facebook since 2007, and I think before about 2 months ago, I think I blocked like one person. And now if anyone just cruises by my wall and is rude about something I posted, which by the way, always civil and always polite, because that's how I portray myself. It's just like, bye-bye, move on, go and be rude in somebody else's face. Yeah. I don't, you know, for me, your sort of Facebook persona is like your home. And if somebody wants to just drop by and crap on you, I mean, they wouldn't do that in your home. So why are you doing
it? You're going to kick them out.
Yeah. I don't understand it.
It's such a good point, because there are a lot of trainers that don't align with our beliefs and our methods, and they are putting things out there. So we need to be out there putting just as much out.
Yeah. And one of the things that we're doing on the new website, And I've got, and Pam's doing a great job working on stuff right now, is putting together so many links and video links of really good examples of positive reinforcement training, so that we can have it on the front end, we can have it on the back end, so that members can share it with clients. Because and one of the reasons why I'm so excited about the new website is I think it's going to be a much better tool for advocacy and education than the one we've got now, which has outstayed its welcome by about 5 years. Because you're right, there are so, you know, so there are so many videos. I mean, even the reels that I sometimes get sucked into on Facebook, this is anecdotal, this is not hard data, but I'd say 3 out of 5 videos that I see are just so far out there in terms of aversiveness to training methods. And 1 out of 5 is what I would sort of call in the middle. And 1 is Emily Lalem or Zach George or somebody that I would go, yes, that's someone that shares my ethics. And we need to flood the marketplace. There needs to be, that ratio needs to change significantly.
In the UK at the moment, one of the, I don't even want to use the term trainer. I don't, because to the point where even trainers that are ethics don't align are also agreeing that this person is not good. They're not putting the information out, but they have a really good marketing team behind them. This is the thing. A lot of dog trainers, like, we train dogs, we're not marketing experts.
But as a business person who studied business, and that's where what I did as a living before I became a dog trainer, I would argue that we are all marketers first and dog trainers second, because if we don't have the ability to market, we're not going to be staying in business very long.
It's hard. It's really hard. You know, it's one of the reasons why, like, over lockdown, I don't know if either of you guys would have seen it, but I did like a Facebook Live every day, like Monday to Friday when we were in lockdown. And I did a year of Facebook Lives Monday to Friday. And then when we kind of all got let out again and we're ungrounded, it was called grounded by the government. And I tell you, my profile raised so much during that period. And I was some days like, oh, I don't know how to do videos. And people were like, no, like, you're a little sparkle of sanity. And I mean, the irony of me being anyone's sanity is hilarious. But then kind of last year, I sort of dropped off a bit. I was still doing the podcast. And then this year, I was like, no, I need to get back on social. And that's why every Monday, I'm doing my little start line weights, because I can do this once a week. And actually, like, I'm pre-recording some of them. You know, like, the other week, I was at a friend's field and I was like, oh, can you video my TikToks for me? I was joking that, like, we were, and yes, it was technically dog training, but I was like, since when did dog training come about videoing TikToks? Like, oh my God.
Nobody taught us that.
Into the Gen Z category, right?
It's interesting, isn't it? Anyway, it's 2 o'clock. Wow, an hour's gone so quickly. Harry, thanks for joining us. It's been fun.
Thank you for having me. Like, I appreciate y'all. It was cool to meet everyone. So
Lovely. Well, if anyone's got any questions, you can reach out to Carrie on Facebook or through her website. This will go out as a podcast afterwards, and Carrie's going to share the podcast across her platforms too. So if you do decide to get involved in the world of canine hoopers, not hoppers.
Not hoppers.
Not hoppers. If you're hopping, you're getting it wrong. Enjoy that's it. Right. And as with any dog sport, you know, it's like, I'm going to compare it to dog walking. I watched a going back to the TikTok videos. I watched a video the other day and it had this really macho man, and it said, when you take your dog for a walk, your dog must do what you want it to do. It cannot sniff. It's your walk and it must go with you on your walk. And I'm looking at this person going, if you didn't own a dog, you wouldn't walk a step in it in your lifetime. The only reason you're out there is because you feel that you have to be out there because you have a dog. Therefore, the walk isn't your walk. It's your dog's bloody walk.
Right.
Therefore, it's got to be enjoyable for your dog. Your dog has to enjoy the process. And it's the same with sports, isn't it? Doesn't matter how competitive you are. Please don't turn your dogs into a functional piece of equipment. Enjoy them, nurture them, make sure they enjoy it as much as you do. Make it fun. Keep it fun.
And one thing I will say with hoopers, like, as a judge, and this goes across all the organizations that I judge for, if there is any harsh handling, I'm kicking you out the ring and you are getting eliminated. Because it's not tolerated. Like, if you are mean to your dog, out.
You're getting eliminated. I can just deal with some saber. Like,
you can hear me doing it as well, can't you? I'm literally there, like.
Oh, I used to do the same thing, Carrie, when I started the Disc Dog Club in St. Louis. Do anybody's wearing the wrong collar or not treating their dog right, you're out.
To be fair, I've only ever come close once and the dog eliminated itself anyway. And I was like, okay, cool, because I was about to make a complaint to the show secretary. Yeah. I'm really lucky that it's literally, there has been one time that I've been like, I am about to get out of my chair and go and speak to someone sternly, because yeah. Most of the people are super sweet with their dogs. Their dogs love their handlers. And it's just, it's teamwork and them having fun together. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely why I love it so much, because it's you and your dog together doing a thing together, which is what having a dog's about, right?
Right.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
All righty.
You bet.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. See you guys next time around.
Bye.
Bye.
That was it, guys. I didn't swear the whole interview. Are you impressed with me? You can tell I was on my best behavior for that one. As I said at the start of the podcast, normal podcasting will resume next week, but I hope you enjoyed this episode. It was something a little bit different, and I just wanted to share it with you guys, because I know not everyone will be in that group. But also go and check out the Pet Professional Guild. They are based all over the world. They have groups and they are promoting all the good stuff, trying to make sure that we are training animals ethically and without using any nasty or punitive training methods. So go and check out the Pet Professional Guild. And as always, guys, because I can't end an episode as we did on the interview, so stay safe, be kind, wash your hands thoroughly, keep your dogs on lead around livestock, and don't let them lick toads. Take care, guys. Bye. I just wanted to ask you a real quick favor. If you could rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast, it's going to help other people find me and listen to what I'm doing here at Canine Hooper's World. We're now on all the socials. So we have the Instagram, we have the Facebook, and we are officially on the TikTok at Canine Hooper's World. And remember to check out our website, www.caninehooperswell.com, where you can find out information on in-person courses, online courses, and if you're doing Hoopers with your dog, you can also join in with our online achievement awards. These are open to any person, any dog, anywhere in the world to come and test your skills and get yourself a cool ribbon.